Our way back to our seats, please. Let's keep going. Folks, make their way back to their seats, please. All right, so as I said, the next step is to go back through and start refining our criteria and see what we truly have consensus on in the room and what we don't. But this was a time I thought, now that our other technical advisory committee members have had a chance to listen to the different discussions we've had so far, to get some of their reflections about what they're hearing. So I wanted to ask them what they're hearing about the discussion about how schools should show that they have met sufficient academic guidelines. Does this seem reasonable to you, this list we had? Does it seem like it's missing things? Does it seem like it's really harsh or severe? But just one of you start?
Juan will start. I'm happy to start. And this has been like super fascinating to me. I'm really serious, because I think that there's a lot of complexity to the decision, and where I think a lot about how we try to create rules for a system without disincentivizing innovation for particular like sections. And so to me, it's about risk management, right? And I think that unintended consequences is often where my head goes, because if you were thinking about rules for a system, what are the things that you're most concerned about that people might engage in that you're not intending to incentivize certain negative behaviors? That you haven't necessarily thought about. So you're kind of doing a lot of thought experiments, right? Because you're like, we never thought that that would be the case. We really didn't mean for that to be the case. We need to figure out how to avoid the allowance of those cases. So to me, I'm thinking that, you know, I'm trying to get away from the 4-day, 5-day, because I know that it's about like 180 days versus 165 with at least 1080 hours versus less than 165 with a waiver for which really is about performance and financial response or sustainability savings, whatever the language is. I apologize, I don't know off the top of my head. But to me, I'm thinking about the concern, I think, is around unintended consequences in two buckets. One of them is in district operations and teacher retention, which I think is what I'm hearing a lot about. And the second one is about impact of student learning and access to services for all students. And you can't get to the impact of services in all students if you haven't taken care of the district operations and teacher retention, right? Having teachers present, having sound operations is not enough, but it's necessary. You know, you guys have heard probably that whole necessary but sufficient stuff. Like, it's sufficient or it's necessary to have teachers and operations working, but it's not sufficient to promote student learning. Does that make sense? And you can argue with me about that any you want, but if you have bodies in a room and you have bus routes working, but you don't have pedagogical expertise and content knowledge, you're not going to get student learning, right? That logic is pretty sound. That's pretty proven. What I worry about is, especially from an equity lens, access to services, if there is not additional considerations that are put into place in terms of operations that allow those services to be provided to students. And I think there are cases that we're hearing where that's exactly what people are doing. And I think the risk that I think the law was trying to mitigate without really naming it is that what's the evidence that you have to show that if you're doing a shortened calendar, whatever the week structure looks like, where you're falling below 165 days, that you're accounting for the loss of access to students, the loss of services available to students, and the loss of the opportunity for students to be engaged with the content, with an educator in the classroom. So to me, I'm always thinking, and even though I help states think through designing accountability systems at the state level, the questions I always ask are about, well, what are the unintended consequences you think about are going to happen for a student's experience in the classroom? And I'm going to let Gary ask his question, because I think it's a really close tie to what I'm thinking about and what I'm worried about. And I know that I'm not going to pretend that you don't hit that 165 in a reasonable amount of time if you're not also talking about a shortened school week. But again, to me, I hope that we're doing enough thinking about the considerations for historically underserved students, that we're allowing for enough components, which I believe were referenced, I think, to a degree in some of the possible options for a narrative, to help people understand the context of a school and a district, in order to be able to supplement that lost day that students may need socialization and support and services.
And I've lost your name, I'm sorry.
Juan.
I hope we could capture those questions that you just asked, because as I'm thinking about, you know, if we're a district that meets the criteria, I'm superintendent of a four-day-week district, then what would we need to consider in terms of school improvement moving forward in order to be able to keep our innovative calendar? And I agree with everything that you just said. We have to think about loss of time, loss of access. What are we doing to provide services to students when they're not with us that day? What is our community willing to support around that engagement? So I think those are really important questions. Yep. I don't know where they would fit into an accountability process or maybe a reporting out process for students that are on an innovative calendar, but those are key to me.
Yeah, and I think what we've talked about in the past is that's that plan that we're going to put together to go with the criteria to say, here's what we're doing. To really make the case that what we're doing is good, it's innovative, it's supportive, it's working, and our community is on board. Gary.
So I do, like Juan, I do a lot of evaluations of systems. And one of the things that we ask systems are about, what's your theory of action? What do you believe is the underlying way things work relative to whatever we're evaluating? And so one of the questions I was thinking about as you were talking was, well, if you didn't have the resource drain, if you didn't have the issues associated with getting teachers, would we be talking about a 4 or 5 day school week at all? So now if you wouldn't, now we're talking about resource issues and allocation of staff, then how do you optimize your scheduling and your school week to organize, to continue to maintain, if not improve, what you're showing for academic performance, which is what the law says. And so that was the thing I was trying to, in my head, think about. What are the things that you would want to look at when you talk about this idea of performance? And I have several questions as well. One of the questions is, if you do reduce, let's say we have to reduce the resource, we don't have the resources to manage what we want, so now we have to figure out how to optimize the resources. When you do reduce the number of days, are you assuming, for example, with students with disabilities or free reduced lunch kids or English learners, that that's going to be an equivalent effect on them when you reduce those days? And if not, what are you going to do about it? Should you do anything at all? The issue of high school, and most of my thinking about this has been around the performance indicator, because that's what I was asked to do. So is growth sufficient to characterize? I mean, what's the outcome that you're interested in? What is it that you want? Isn't it you want to make sure that students have the capability to achieve grade level expectations by the end of the school year? Is that the goal? I don't know. I think that's the goal. That's what standards are for. But if that's the goal, then what things do you collect to support that outcome? Right now, I think you have growth, and then you have graduation rate for high school. Is that sufficient? Is that important enough? How do you know whether that's continuing on? And what happens when schools or districts don't begin to meet that but are on a shortened calendar? Are they off? Do they no longer have the shortened calendar? But if they have if they do that, then what happens to staffing in schools? And so there's lots of churn that happens when you do that. So those are some of the things I was thinking about as you were having this conversation. I didn't have any answers and don't have any great insight. It's just things I think you need to think about.
I'll take two.
Well, our first time that we met, we had a lot of discussion about that.
And we did talk, and I know one of my biggest concerns is how are we meeting the needs of underserved children? I mean, when you look at what your overall population is and the overall scoring of students, we know that there's those hidden pockets. And what are we doing to look at that? That's been my concern. We started talking about how to meet some of those needs and what might happen. And there's always been an underlying concern within all of our discussions that this is something about control. I feel it every time I come that this is about whether somebody can tell a school what to do or not to do. And I really think we're not all on the same page about what we're here to do. It doesn't feel that way to me. I think there's some undercurrent agenda that maybe keep us from doing what, you know, where people have just certain really strong points. But after that first discussion, we've really not talked about underserved populations. I mean, until you've brought it up now. And to the fact that my grad student said, nobody's talking about contingency plans for supporting those underserved kids. And I said, oh, we've talked about them, but she hadn't heard it at all today. And again, that theme came up today about some control issues. And I don't know how we need to settle that and maybe push some of those things aside. But I really think the purpose of this, and really can try to define it, is what people have just recapped, that we're looking at how we can say to the public, say to other people, we're comfortable with our four-day program because we know children's needs are being met. Education is going on in our state, and we can show you that it does. It's not about 4 or 5 day weeks. It's about we're trying to be innovative and doing different things. And a lot of disability parents, I can tell you, I work with schools and parents with disabilities, and I hear all the issues, and there are quite a few about even 5 days not meeting their needs. And then you go to equity issues, and then you go to poverty issues, and those things, the trauma that kids go through. Then we didn't, while we've talked today about the calendar, we've neglected to even speak about the summer again. And so, you know, your suggestion, and I get it about the tests. I was a teacher for 15 years. I get it. And while we may be moving those tests to the end of the year, which I think is a great thing, we still haven't addressed the summer. Do the teachers just want it to be over and we don't see them again till September 1st? I mean, I did as a teacher. I mean, I was happy for the summer. But I just think that we have to look. I don't know if 3 meetings is enough, quite frankly. Maybe it is.
We will be out of time. So we were only given enough time to do this, and then it has to go out for public comment.
And there's
a schedule with that.
So I feel like we've dropped all those issues in our discussion. And I personally, even that we look, I want to be fair to schools. I don't want to be unfair. I'm an educator in my heart. But I'm also a child advocate for increased education. That educator wants me to know we're doing a good job. And so it's a hard balance. And I just think we've dropped part of that conversation.
One of the things I want to emphasize to you is that, see, I don't think if we're talking about that is what happens with a school, that you add a half a day and you staff kids, that doesn't make any difference if that's a special education child. It makes a difference if it's a at-risk kid or emotionally disturbed kid. Those are addressed there as well. Also, that school also has an option of summer school. So that cuts in, you know, that drop back. So if you do something like that, I think that's important because I think it's that you're setting something up to make kids better, learn better in a better way, to even make better scores. I think where we get into a problem, if we have a different issue that occurs in a 4-day school versus a 5-day school. You know, I keep hearing everybody say it's not a 4-day week or a 5-day week. See, I still see that it is. Because if you make a rule for a 4-day school week, but you don't for a 5, I think you make it that issue.
Can you explain how you see that? Because I still am having a hard time seeing that. Because you can do either. You can go 3 days if you wanted. Obviously, you would be lapping. You would be year-round. Probably you'd be going 4 on some of those weeks. But it is that flexibility, I think we worked really hard to keep that so districts could have that innovation. And frankly, I want to also mention I really like your idea of taking that school that is working with higher need populations and they're not performing where they would qualify, providing that extra time could be a remedy. I mean, that's a out-of-the-box way of thinking about providing what you wanted for those schools in the district that qualify and that one that doesn't. You have met the need, and there's even an opportunity for extra pay for those teachers that come in and do that extra duty of the additional day, potentially.
Something that I think we touched on in the first meeting, and of course I wasn't at the second, but just along the lines of sort of additional considerations, I struggle with, as a working mother with three kids, in an economy, even in Oklahoma, where the American work week is Monday to Friday, like how are from the perspective of the safety and care of our children and families whose work schedules, you know, are Monday through Friday or whatever, are we just okay with kids just being home alone? Because wages in our state and elsewhere are going to make additional child care. So the burden is actually sort of in some respect shifting from the school can't afford to stay open, shifting that burden to the families who are going to have to cover that kind of care for their children. And I think when I talk with people in just communities, that's an immediate reaction. And I know I do recall that some schools said parents really liked it and everything, but I think we're making an assumption that there's stay-at-home parents in a lot of communities that could be impacted by this, and that's not exactly the case across our state given the diversity of the economies.
So just to clarify a couple points, because I've heard a couple things. One, when I went back through my notes about the first start or everything we were hoping we talked about, the one thing that I had listed that either we haven't talked about or isn't on the agenda for after lunch was student-level considerations. So I appreciate you bringing that back up. As far as summer school programs, as what to do with kids on that fourth day or on the extra weeks in the summer when they're out, one of the things I heard last week was the idea of the community support. And again, talking about within the plan, when we present a plan with our criteria, we being a district, that we hit those things. We talk about how we're meeting the needs of underserved students during summer school. Or we talk about the fact, and I don't remember who it was, but somebody told me that churches are open on Fridays and the kids who need help go to the church on Fridays. And that takes care of the daycare, and that's a community-wide decision. Will that work in Oklahoma City? Probably not. Will that work in some of these rural communities? Yes. But that's part of the plan, that they have to hit some of those things. What are you doing about underserved populations? What are you doing about the kids that are home when parents are at work? What are you doing about making sure the kids are fed on the days they're not in school? How are you handling all these kinds of concerns? So right now, because it's hugely important and yet not an academic indicator, we wanted to put all of that kind of stuff into a plan, and the plan goes in front of the state board every year, or whatever they decide in the rulemaking, to review. At least at the very first time, they will review the entire plan.
Can I just make a quick comment? When talking about the kids that do not have the meals at their home in that day, that is actually an issue that we've talked about when the teachers gather together. It's not just academics, it's emotional. It's kids that don't have the finances. You know, if you have a kid there and he's scoring really good and all of a sudden his grades go down, what trauma happened within that family, going back to what traumas and really affecting these scores? So I think in some avenue, whenever that is, I think that that school would have to staff kids and get on target of what each individual kid needs for that school.
I love what you've talked about in the work that you do in the schools, but beyond the staffing, I think there is still a real struggle about the resources then required. I mean, so then what are you offering those kids who need those free and reduced lunch meals on Friday? Like, what is the tangible resource that is being put to bear? And I think there's an assumption that the nonprofit or the faith community will step into that. And I'll just tell you, running an organization where we raise $10 million a year, mostly from Oklahoma City, that we distribute throughout 53 counties in central and western Oklahoma, those resources to feed kids are not coming from those communities.
I think my only argument to that point is Fridays are the scapegoat. What about the 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks at Christmas? Nobody talks about those. The spring break, the week out for hunting season that a lot of districts do in Thanksgiving. What about the 2.5 or 3 months in the summer? Where's the outcry for feeding those kids during that time?
We actually are very active in the summer and on school outbreaks.
I'm not talking the food bank, because we use the food bank all the time, but we also hand it out on Fridays. We also have meals on Fridays, and we have summer feeding. But that, I'm just saying, why are we singling out Friday instead of talking about the long open periods in the summer and those other times?
It's because we're talking about going below a minimum standard of making having children have access to a public school experience. So I guess I don't understand why it's unfathomable to argue that.
But wouldn't you also agree that if I'm a 5-day school week who decides, this assessment thing aside, decides that I'm going to end in school on April 30th, that I should also be able to have to put in my plan, how am I going to feed kids at times that if I hadn't had a shortened school year, I would be feeding them? That goes in the plan regardless of whether it's 4-day school week or 5-day school week. It goes in the plan because you're under the 165 of days. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, you want this.
I'll just make one comment to that because, you know, I'm all over this state. I probably have 10 schools in my district as a representative, but we serve about 130 other schools, and it doesn't northeast Oklahoma, southeast Oklahoma, et cetera. So, you know, you would be surprised how many people within those schools will come in and help with those kids if it's a feeding issue or something like that. I've not yet seen these type of schools not step up for whatever that school needs at that time. And you do have the issue of summer, and, you know, we're not going to be able to feed them every day. It's just a thing across, but there are people there that will help.
Thank you. I think there's probably others in the room who haven't had a moment to speak, and I would like to hear from you. I think it's really important as well, and I know you all agree. But thank you for your comments earlier.
I think here everybody... we are talking about the best interest for the kids. My main thing is, I teach for Oklahoma City Public School, but I live in Edmond. And both sides, the parents are, most of them are working, or sometimes in the jailhouse or some other places. So 5 days is appropriate for both the school district, I noticed, because if it's Edmond School, we parents are working, both parents are working. So the kids are in a safe sanctuary when they are in school. And even I prefer school to go a little bit over instead of 2:30, because they are doing something good in school. Okay? Even Saturday school, sports, music, anything, it's good for the kids, not only working parents, other parents too. And usually, somehow or other, they find food. Because last year I went to Life Church to distribute food for this poor neighborhood. So my thing is, the more, even though I'm a teacher, the teachers were against me when I said, we want 5-day school. Most of the teachers said, Gauri, why are you talking about 5-day school? I said, let's look at the best interest of the kids. So I think most of us are here for a good reason. So whatever we decide, legislatures or educators, think about 100% for these future kids.
Other of my quiet, or at least normally quiet, I don't think the Heim brothers are normally quiet, but do you guys have anything to say? I know, like, I haven't heard from you guys.
Kevin, what do you have to say?
Careful what I ask for.
I guess for me, I guess I'm a bit confused because I feel we're debating the law, that's already been passed, not debating how we're going to conform to the law or what we're going to do for those exceptions. I understand there's some heavy passions in here. I work at a school district that's 85% free and reduced for 50-some percent Hispanic, 45% EL. We're never going to meet any of those criteria. We can't go short in school year if we want to go short. There's nothing up there we're ever going to meet just because of the way it works, and nor would it be good for our school district. But I'm not going to tell you what's good for your school district. But right now, I think we're just trying to find how we're going to make exceptions where you can write a waiver to it, and that's kind of what I'm looking for. And we kind of keep getting off subject just a little bit.
Others.
Can I ask a question? And we may be doing this later. So there's this question. Do you have any concerns about what you have heard so far? So going back to those kind of three areas that we were talking about earlier, not F. Anyone believe that that is too high? Too low? Okay, not ATSI, which means the targeted student group that has fallen to the lowest in the state. And then the piece that I think where we've had the most conversation is being above the state average in an indicator. Is that just right? Is that too high? Is that too low? All right, let's give just to everybody a chance to soak that in.
So this is, I put the slide up for you, Superintendent.
Oh.
This is where we sit right now. So again, the numbers you've seen are based on this. The one thing I changed, because we didn't talk about it, but I kind of thought we would, was that if we change the minimum post-secondary opportunities to a grade above a D, we get those three additional districts in that failed only on the high school, not having more than half of their, not having the percentage of kids enrolled in post-secondary opportunities being above the average. That was the only thing I changed on this list, but that was just me trying to project what you guys were going to tell me. But this list is right now what we need to talk about and what needs to be changed or left.
So this I do really want to hear conversation around. Do you think, like, can you proudly go out and say, we believe school districts that are below the state average should be able to give less instruction to kids?
Okay. I'm going to go to the 4-day week. I don't think you can put the post-secondary opportunities up there when some schools aren't member of Career Techs and some schools have Career Techs that are denying some students entry to the Career Tech. Therefore, that's a very unfair. I don't think that one can be involved when I can't get to that. If I was trying there, I can't get to that D because I have kids being denied the opportunity to take post-secondary based on different criteria.
And remember, that's just one of the many opportunities with post-secondary. Yes. So,
but when you're 25% of your kids have parents who went to college, you have to have that one in order to get there.
Okay. Okay, thank you. All right, so back to that question. Should it be anybody comfortable saying we should have fewer than 165 days if schools are performing below the state average in whatever indicator we're talking about? Anybody in the room? Really? Really? Wow.
You know, I look at this here and I guess I have a problem with the average. I know that's where we want to get, but
the average is going to be the average.
Yes.
The average is the school.
Right. But if you have to perform at that level, and let's say you're at the 50th percentile, or no, you fall down to 47 as a 4-day-a-week school, then that does not give you the ability to keep it. It's gone. But you've got some other schools that's 5-day-a-week, that's 49, that's 46, and they don't have to change anything.
No, they all have to go 165 days or more.
Okay.
So that's all the same for everybody.
Yeah. So just it's the same for everybody. They all have to go 165 days or more.
So I have something to add to that. I don't know if this is going to be helpful at all, but I think it's restating something that has been argued on both sides of. And I think someone very aptly noted, is it good enough to be at or above the state average if you're, and I'm going to say greater than 165 days, but really what everyone's arguing is the five-day school week. And I'm going to likely say that that's probably not okay. It's not good enough. Everyone's saying that if you're a five-day school week and you're at the average for the combined math and ELA, that's probably not good enough because we want to see you improve. But they're not arguing for eliminating instructional time. I think that's the two sides of, I think, what you're trying to frame. It absolutely is about instructional time. Unless you're doing it 5 days a week, it's the same amount of instruction time.
Except that there is evidence that some of these kids can't do that over time. The younger kids in particular, elementary school, are not doing as well in other states with this.
What the research actually says is that you're going to drop down about 2 years, and then after that 2 years, those scores are going to come right back up, and there's not much drop at all.
For the ones that have enrichment going on the fifth day, you have to pull that out of those. If you do the ones that are just shut down versus the ones that are still open and teachers are still coming in and they're targeting student for support, yes. But the ones that are truly shutting down, you're seeing a drop in elementary school. Not in middle high, but you are in elementary school.
Yeah, and I'll be clear, I'm not trying to advocate one way or the other, but what I am saying is that what I'm hearing is that there is concern that is there a set of criteria, to bring it back to a point about what's in the law that I think everyone is having to struggle with, is that are there criteria that are being specified to eliminate additional risks of the loss of instructional time? To your point, there may not be a loss of instructional time. Now, if there isn't a loss of instructional time and they're still below the state average, are you okay with that, I think is what your question is. And
it's too low, yes. But that's where I'm going to explain.
Okay.
If it's schools less than 165 days and you're scoring just below, a little bit below average, then you don't have the right to keep a four-day-a-week school.
Okay, so just a reminder, there are more school districts going 5 days a week with fewer than 165 days right now, many more than four-day schools. Weeks, districts. Okay, so just kind of keep this in mind that this is actually impacting 5 day a week schools, probably two and a half times more than those that are on a 4 day schedule. And in my mind, and I think by the shaking of heads, nodding, it's most everyone would say, yeah, that is not okay. If you continue to drop below everybody else, then we are not supportive of granting even less days to learn. We know that students who have high need, special ed, English learners, those children in poverty, need more time, not less, to acquire the kind of long-term foundational skills that carry year after year with them. You know that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, it's not the lack of time. That time is there. See, what I really like, if there is a situation, let's find a way to make you better. Let's do that Friday maybe where teachers come in. Let's staff that. Let's find out what's going on rather than say to you and stop you from doing 4 days a week school. Because another factor that we haven't talked about, you know who's going to pick up those teachers and those kids that don't like it? Epic. So when you change it, then you've got these people to deal with because it's going to fit some of these people's reasons. So I think doing something that actually makes them better and working with those kids, and I probably need to be quiet. I've talked enough.
And I'm with you. I would just say that the sequence is where I would be perhaps in disagreement. I think that thinking about it and implementing a plan needs to happen first and demonstrate that it works, and then you've moved them to a place where they're no longer meeting this, you know, deficient of the standard. So,
And just to be clear, I want to go back to a point Kevin made earlier, because it's a good one. We are going crazy on some of these discussions. Our role really is we have a law, and we're supposed to provide the state board with some guidance on criteria we think is important. So, yeah, EPIC may take over. I don't know, but I don't know how to put that in front of a state board on criteria. That's not our rule. If you guys want to argue with the legislators to change the rule, that's a whole different story, or change the law, that's a whole different story. It could be, but I don't know how to attack that in the next 20 minutes, and I've got 20 minutes for a lunch break. Missy.
Okay. I agree about that we should be better than state average. I completely agree with that wholeheartedly. This is the issue I would like to add in. I think that there should be growth or at state average, because you have underperforming schools that they can have these plans and be rock stars and doing great things with that school, and they can have so much gains that's still not at the state average.
So wait, what we're saying is that the amount of growth you show has to be more than half the state. So it's not that you have to be above the state average on getting a 300 or percent proficient or anything like that. That's not on the table. So this is growth value. So when we calculate the growth value, is it above average?
What I'm hearing is that you're saying if you're below that state average, you have to be demonstrating improvement on that indicator.
Say that again, because I'm not following that.
We are already
below growth right now. That state average is not where we're actually showing much growth.
No, I understand that. She's saying that instead of making the threshold at or above the state average, demonstrating improvement towards the state average. My counterpoint is, that how slippery of a slope does that become?
Yeah.
Because what kind of growth are we talking about? 1 point? I mean, how do we get our kids as a state moving to have real sustained inertia?
And to me, the bigger issue is that right now, to show if you're showing growth, you've got to score over 100. Right now, the state average is 89. We're not showing growth. So to even meet the state average, you're not showing much growth. So, you know, zero, it doesn't go negative. Below 100 is we're not showing growth. So I think we've already hit that. The score you can get from a 0 to a 200, anything from 100 to 200, you are showing good growth. In 0 to 99, you are not. You're at your school, your kids are either staying where they are or they're falling backwards, but just not much. So if I went from a high basic to a low basic, I could still get, I think, 50 points. So for you having an average below 100, meaning you're either staying where you are, your kids are falling backwards, or only a few kids are growing. And that averages out to a 90. For all of your kids to be growing, you have to have an average of 100. So already being below 100 says you're not growing all your kids. So the average right now is below 100. So I don't think we can show that you're below the average, but you're still growing, because the average is not growing. I mean, it shows that the kids are not growing. Is below.
So, I mean, I think we have to face that, you know, as a state. Our state is not growing. And so it's real easy to kind of go, hey, we're doing okay. But, like, when we really look at the data to inform what's the position going to be about some of this, we really are facing facts that we are not where I think anybody wants to be. And if we keep this kind of coming back to where are our children and really press that civil rights point again, it's very difficult. I mean, I cannot take this to the public and say, I'm for this. And that's the first step that has to happen. And let it fall on my shoulders. You can not like me. But I just can't. I can't articulate that. I can't sit down in front of TV cameras and explain why this is good. And, like, that's the first step. And then I got to take it to a board and say, I believe in this. And even if I said that, I think the board would turn back and go, what? You mean the bar is set that you're not an F? Like, because that's the first thing out of the gate. Do you see how that can sound for people not in it?
And just for an FYI, for all the 181 schools that meet all the criteria, they are all either A, B, or C schools. So the D's did not make it, but A, B's, and C's. There are some of all of those that have made it.
So what I hear you saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, moving a four-day-a-week school back to a five-day-a-week school is going to make the difference rather than having the fifth day where they come in and staff kids and go over everything.
No. I've had offline conversations with our friend Frank back there, and he said, I can find a way to get us to 165 days and for the most part stay a four-day week. So it really is about the law says 165 days. What are the guidelines for a waiver? And what the superintendent is saying, if it's a waiver, it means you get an exception from the law. And if you get an exception from the law, I can't say, well, all these schools are getting a D and not growing very much and have a low academic achievement in high school. Whoops. I don't want to install updates. I'm not comfortable saying they get a waiver from the law. Fair?
Yes, ma'am. With all deference to the speaker, I feel like we've spent a lot of time talking about something when we're really supposed to be talking about 165 days. We have school districts that have gone down to 135, 134 days. That means over an eight-hour day for a kindergartner. And as I pointed out at the last meeting, our child labor laws don't require kindergartners to go to work that long. You cannot work an eight-hour day until you're 14. So I think we really need to get back to the topic of 165 days or not 165 days and get off of the issue of four-day weeks. Thank you.
So let me switch topics just for a second to see if we have any consensus on the graduation rate for high schools. Does anybody disagree that the high school should have a graduation rate above the state average? Or one of the things we talked about last time is if the state average starts decreasing in this state, that we hold the baseline as this year, which is 82.3. But you should either have a graduation rate of 82.3 or be above the state average. That fit with the theory of action, that what we're doing with the reschedule is benefiting the kids and their college and career outcomes. Sean.
I'm not wanting to debate that. I just wanted to make sure a couple of things were clear. Senator Pemberton said earlier, I think one of the pieces, we had a great discussion on this last time, and you know, I'm there. I think the only big question, as what was said before on some of this, was is it at or above? And I know that's a little thing, but I think as we go forward, that may be a better thing to kind of look at. And then the other piece of if the state average goes down, do we keep our level higher? My only concern with that is the definition of graduation rate has been prone to change over time. So if the definition tightens up and that makes the number go down, I would hate for us to keep our level higher when the rules changed for the game.
That's fair. So if the math that makes the number go down, that's bad. If it's just actual people aren't graduating, that's fine. I mean, that's fine to keep it where it was. Okay, fair. Anybody, I'm actually just trying to, we've got check marks not to not F, not CSI, not TSI, or ATSI. I'm trying to figure out, and then we've crossed out minimum post-secondary opportunity grade above a D as we don't have consensus. Not that everybody thinks should be but crossed out, but that we don't have consensus. Does anybody say it should be below, it should be okay if you have a below average graduation rate in a high school? Should they be allowed to go less than 165 days? Anybody going to yell if I put a check mark next to that? Let's rephrase that. You can't see this, right? Okay, so now we're back to just, let's start with growth, since that's the one we've talked about the most. Growth for elementary and middle being above the state average. When we, and this, by the way, the part that's important is I left it compensatory. So this is not being above average in ELA and being above average in math. But when I look at the average, overall, my kids are above the average.
So does everybody get that? That's the combined average. That's how all those different numbers that you saw earlier were calculated when we were showing the impact data of different school sites. So that is a little bit lower bar.
So it's this middle one right here. So it is this one.
So that's
that one.
Yeah. Three out of 337 schools going below 165 days, 161 would not make that, even if it's the combined average. But 167 would meet that. So 176. That matters. All right. Does anyone have a problem with that and thinks we need to go back and revisit that? Yes.
So, yeah, my memory is I actually calculated it as at or above, but I need to go back and check my spreadsheet. So right now I'm just changing it here. Yeah, I don't think it does, but I will go back and double check that during lunch. I'm just not good at facilitating and doing math at the same time, so I need a break to do that. Does anybody say I do not put a check mark next to this one? Okay, and that leaves us with this one. That your percentage of students meeting their target in high school, meeting the target for your student group, has to be at or above average for ELA and math together. So again, the average of them together, not separately. So let me jump back again.
And so target is different than proficiency. Remember, yep. That's much lower. Yes.
How is our state average compared to national average?
Much lower. On graduation, it's not much. It's probably a point and a half.
Lower.
I think the national average is 83 something.
Yeah.
Katie, right here.
I'm gonna just reach in right. Well, it may not be a popular position, but I think to be exempt from the law and to go below 165 days, it should not be the composite. It should be showing growth in both math and English language separately, because I think then you could have a school that those kids are struggling in math, and then why would we justify providing less instruction?
Okay. Is there anybody in the room that agrees? Raise your hand. Okay, we have a board member. We have two board members, state board members, who agree with that.
Can I just rephrase the question for a second? Would you say we have consensus that you should at least not drop below the composite, the compensatory, that would be, you should definitely not go lower than that? You're saying I can't even agree to that. So compensatory is lower than conjunctive. You're saying I want them both. You're arguing for the and rule right now is the or rule. Can we say, what I'm looking for first is consensus. Do we have consensus that at least nobody should drop below the or rule? That when I average it together, you don't drop below the or. Do we have consensus that that is definitely a minimum bar we should not drop below?
Yes, so it seems like we see lots of people in the room shaking their head.
And
yes.
We don't have consensus, we have people on both sides about is it and or. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fair.
So as far as As far as our role of finding areas where we have consensus, that's it. Sorry, I can't even do PowerPoint and talk at the same time. Okay, and again, what this does is bring three high schools and three districts back into the mix, and now we're up to 43 districts. I'd have to go back and count the number of schools now, but 43 districts meet all the criteria.
And that's 43 districts that meet for every school in their district.
Yes, and that is of the current districts currently below 165 days. I still have a lunchtime task of running the numbers for the
Marcy?
Ones that are above, like 165 or above.
The clarification of site, when you talk
yes.
about the
district,
site. If you have one site that may not meet that criteria, the conversation that we started with, like at 9:15. You know, is it site? When you say school.
Does school and site are different things? No.
Yes, they are.
Yes.
Of course.
So district, some it's a terminology. So if you're talking about your district, your full school, some may look at school as meaning district. Some may right. not equate school equal to a site. So I think you need to, we need to clarify that because that goes back to the question of, can I put one on a plan of improvement? If eight of mine, that would be a question that I would have.
Then I need to find out what I've got in my data because I don't know what
no,
I have.
No, no, really no, no. You've done it all correctly. You're just the terminology. You said that would be 43 districts.
District.
Yeah.
And that's not.
And how many school sites would that?
I asked, is a school the same thing as a site? And I was told, no, it's not.
No. We just said district. District. Yeah. So if you go back, Marianne, if you go back to all of your earlier slides, you
okay,
already
they are correct.
Broke
okay,
them
that just
up.
Panicked me
yeah.
that maybe they're not
and
correct.
So what we haven't, you've told, can okay. you, is do you want this on the screen?
Yeah, no, that one was fine. It was just which schools are 4-day and 5-day.
So I guess what I'm getting at is, have you updated? You told us it would include 43 now
yes.
districts where every school site in the district qualifies.
Right.
How much of an increase to schools? You haven't told us that.
Right, because that's I still need to look up.
Oh.
Let's see.
We could do that, maybe get that over lunch.
Yeah, that's what I thought I was doing for all of this, but there seemed to be a lull in the conversation, so.
Okay.
Whatever's waiting on me.
Okay. I will mention while we're taking that moment that our lunch is here, and I want to thank OSSBA. Okay. For providing a really good-looking lunch out there. And it's a hot lunch, by the way, so that's pretty amazing. Would you like to say anything? We have really appreciate it. We appreciate all of those partners that have helped us have meals at each one of these meetings. So thank you for allowing us to be able to eat and continue going. Marianne, what do you suggest we do right now?
It is lunchtime. I would suggest we take a break from lunch. Let me get the answers to the few questions you guys have asked that I did not prepare ahead of time. We'll come back. I'll go over that data and then turn it over to the finance discussion because that is the one thing we've never talked about is the school funding piece.
All right. So that sounds good. We'll do that. Everybody?
So 12:30, good for a lunch break?
Yeah, just feel free to come on back in and visit and make phone calls as you need them, and we will be right back. And thanks again for lunch.